if it's local and it matters. It's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
Hi, welcome to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. I'm your host, Steve Stewart. We're here every Tuesday and Thursday at noon, 12 p.m. That's a change from last week, obviously. Appreciate you tuning in today. We have got so much news, it is like trying to drink water out of a fire hydrant. A lot of things going on. Day 13 of the federal corruption trial downtown. We'll get you caught up to date on what's going on there. Right now, JT Burnett is being cross-examined as we speak by federal lawyers. We got school board news. School board member Roseanne Wood, again in the news, recently testing positive for COVID and blaming the liberty-seeking parents who were at the meeting. She's in the news again, and you really wouldn't know about it unless you read TOS reports or the Florida Capital Star. She did a little tweeting over the weekend trying to score political points regarding Governor Ron DeSantis's children. That's where we are now. Elected officials are using children to make political points. We saw Nikki Fried prayed up a 12-year-old in front of the camera. And so, I tell you, it doesn't get any better in terms of where these our politics are headed. And it's, you can start right here locally to get your dose of some of the disgusting actions of local officials. Unfortunately, you know, some of the narrative on this on Twitter, which there were a lot of tweets deleted related to this, and we'll get into that in the next segment. The fact she apologized for spreading misinformation, but not for actually trying to out Ron DeSantis' kids. So we'll dig into that. Also, we got the letter from Education Commissioner Richard Corcoran is up on our website at Talos Reports, the one sent to Rocky Hanna in regards to his decision on Monday, 2 days before school starts, to flip-flop from the mask optional policy that he has been supporting for months and now is going to be requiring masks, at least up to Labor Day. And, you know, and we'll talk about the, obviously, the complexities of this decision and the politics of this. And, you know, there is a little bit of a sense of empathy for Superintendent Hanna in the sense he's trying to thread a needle. But I got to tell you, the bottom line is what he did is against the law. And I, you know, if we want to talk about, you know, leaving the power up to local government, listen, that's one discussion. But the governor put out an executive order, which if, you know, I'm not a lawyer and we'll see what happens here. But by what I'm reading, he has the authority to do that and it becomes law. And so, I mean, in a way, Superintendent Hanna had an easy out. He chose not to take it. And now there's a letter from Education Commissioner Richard Corcoran, and we'll go over the details in that. It was not a friendly letter at all. Used some pretty strong language. Violations of the law, I think, was one. But so we'll dig into that. Not only about the issue of the mask mandate, this is about law and order also. I mean, you can disagree with things that politicians do. You can disagree with Ron DeSantis' order, bring it up in 2 years and make it a campaign issue. But what we can't have happening is local officials just disregarding the law. So we'll talk about that in the next segment. At 11:30, we're going to go over it. Listen, you know, this issue that has been hitting the Tallahassee Democrats' opinion pages over the last week. You know, it started with Jeremy Matlow's opinion piece, which was followed by a response from the chamber and other opinion pieces. I mean, it's clear that the Tallahassee Democrat at this point will print any opinion piece that's submitted. And now we've got another piece by former City Commissioner Debbie Leitze, who suddenly sees corruption in local government. Now, this is someone who served for close to 20 years. And, you know, we're going to run through some of the things that happened while she was in office. And then we're going to tell you what I really think the motive is of this opinion piece that she's written. It starts off a lot like Commissioner Matlow's. And so, you know, we'll discuss that a little bit. And, you know, I just hope that we don't get too far down this road. But, you know, there are a number of elected leaders, community leaders that are hijacking this corruption message. And, you know, it could end up hurting us more than a friggin' federal trial on corruption. So we'll diagnose what Ms. Lightsey had to say in her opinion piece and why I think it's not only hypocritical, but it is, you know, factually incorrect in the way they're trying to deal with this. And then we'll reveal some other information. Usually when you write an opinion piece, if you write it and it favors maybe where you work or a member of your family, you sort of disclose that. We'll talk about something that Commissioner Lightsey or former Commissioner Lightsey didn't disclose, which I think has a huge bearing on what she's writing. So we'll deal with that. And then we're going to talk about sort of what's going on here economically. We've got the Chamber of Commerce coming up for a lot of the, obviously the movers and shakers, should we say, that are going to go over to Amelia Island this weekend. And I thought it'd be a good idea to sort of look at sort of where we are from an economic perspective. Some of the things that are going on, I mean, you know, the Amazon deal looks like it's pretty much in the books. What does that impact look like compared to the last job numbers we just reported? You know, we talked about the airport traffic and where it has improved. Look at the labor force. You know, there's a report out by Morgan Stanley talking about some of the cities in Florida that are benefiting from people moving from larger cities that are outside of Florida. And so I think, again, one of the things that is really a little bit disturbing about this corruption talk from some of our community leaders is not that it's looking to weed out corruption and to fix some things that happened in the past, is how they're trying to go about this. And there's definitely two different, you know, there's two different roads. You can be sincerely trying to weed out corruption without trying to impact what our economy might look like over the next 2 to 4 years. And so I think that's a delineation to make. And if you look at the possible opportunities here, you know, we've got a robust resale housing market and I guess a new construction market also. And, you know, people talk about how much homes have increased, the pricing. Well, look, it has increased here, but relatively speaking, when you look around the state of Florida, and we'll talk about this, is that this is a place, if you're looking to move to Florida and pricing for homes is an issue, we would pop up as one of the, you know, least expensive areas to go in the state of Florida. And so, you know, I view that as an opportunity. Some other people, I think, don't view that as an opportunity. They view that as, you know, uncontrolled growth, sprawl. And I think, you know, that's the issue that we're having to deal with here right now during this federal corruption trial, is people that are taking some of these things and trying to use it as a political hammer. And we'll detail some of that. And again, a lot of this will be my opinion, but there's some facts here involved too when you start looking at some of these things. So, all right, well, listen, again, welcome to our new time at, again, as I said, noon today, and we'll be the same. It will be the same on Thursday. We'll get into the routine and sit back and get prepared to be informed on a lot of things going on here locally. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold. You don't have to read my mind to know.
And it matters. It's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
Hi, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. Some breaking news. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo has announced he is, quote, stepping aside from his office. Cuomo called the impeachment investigation into him politically motivated, but added that he was stepping down because he would never want to be unhelpful in any way. So I understand that he will be resigning in 14 days. Not sure what the reason for the 14 days is. Probably do something with qualifying for a pension or retirement. But anyway, that's some national news there. He's been under, I guess, investigation. A 130-page report came out, and so this is sort of the results of that. But anyway, Andrew Cuomo will be resigning from his office, and I'm not sure how they replaced the governor in New York. We'll have to look that up. But anyway, a little breaking news there. And all right, so we're going to pivot to Leon County School Board. And school board member Roseanne Wood, you know, as I've talked about here on this show, we've put a lot of resources and time into covering the school board over the last 6 months to a year. And we're anchored there. We're continuing to do public records requests, cover the meetings, and it's been very fruitful in the sense that, you know, it's not like the city and the county in terms of how they present the issues they're covering. So it's a little bit harder work, but anyway, it's very important work because you got, you know, 34,000 students in K-12 schools with parents involved. And so it's a really big audience for issues that affect them. So this whole issue of the mask mandate, has been, you know, very emotional at these meetings. And the school board members, there are five school board members, but from what I can tell now is the superintendent pretty much runs the show. And they sort of gets recommendations from the school board members. But Rocky Hanna presides over those meetings. And Roseanne Wood is a school board member who I would label as progressive, and I don't mean that in an attacking way. That's just her position. She's very thoughtful. And for the most part, up till this point, I had given her the benefit of the doubt as being very sincere in her move to want to have a mask mandate when that was become an issue. And Superintendent Hanna talked about, you know, listen, we're going to be mask optional. Ms. Wood accepted that and moved forth with trying to craft some policies that she thought would protect kids because, again, her perspective is that this is a major issue for school-age children. And we'll save that debate for some other time. But, you know, and there's been a couple of meetings where parents have shown up and it's been very emotional for everybody. And so she's been vaccinated and she wears a mask on the dais, but she came down with COVID and she really struck out at basically blamed it on, quote, liberty loving people who were showing up to these meetings unvaccinated and unmasked and yelling at them about COVID. Now look, even given that, I think I can look past as someone who gets infected with this virus, an emotional outburst like that is still something you can overlook because of what's going on. But what she just recently did is something I think a lot of people are going to have a tough time really looking past without some kind of apology. And I don't know that you're going to find this anywhere in the news. This was something that circled around in social media. There were a couple of tweets that were deleted by reporters because they, quote, said it was not in the proper context, which, you know, put it in the proper context, you know, write a story. But we have a story up on Taos Reports that was actually broken by the Florida Capital Star first, and we have republished it. You know, and the title is School Board Member Roseanne Wood Attempts to Dox Florida Governor DeSantis's Children. And this, you know, this is a serious story and it on a number of different levels. But what it does really tell you, unfortunately, is where our political debate is headed. But so Leon County, Florida School Board Member Roseanne Wood recently claimed in a Facebook post that Governor Ron DeSantis' children were enrolled in a school which reinstated a mask mandate for students. Now, and this was the post, quote, I just got word through the listserv at McClay where Ron DeSantis is sending his children. Yes, an elected official just tweeted out where the governor was sending his children to school, has rescinded their opt-out policy and is requiring masks for all people on campus for the beginning of the school year. Wise decision, safety first. Now, this is obviously a post to score political points that, hey, Ron DeSantis is against mask mandates, but he is sending his children to a school that has just reinstated a mask mandate. Now, you know, there's a couple of things here. First, you're really exposing where these kids are going to school, McClay, and you know, you're doing something that usually was sort of the third rail in politics. One of the third rails is you don't go after politicians' children. You don't put them in the mix. And so she did this all in one social media post. And it started getting picked up statewide in the, you know, on social media. However, it looks like probably about an hour afterwards, she says, she changes, she edits the Facebook post, and she says, I just got word through the listserv at McClay, who has rescinded their opt-out policy and is requiring masks of all people on campus for the beginning of school. Wise decision, safety first. See, she took out the Ron DeSantis children quote. And then she says, update, I've been told that I was misinformed and that Ron DeSantis' children are not enrolled. I apologize for spreading misinformation. Now, I guess she gets a check for correcting the tweet, but what she does not seem to understand or did not acknowledge is that if the kids were going to McClay, she would still have left this tweet up. So it's okay in her mind, based on the way she's handled this, it's okay for her to reveal where the governor is sending his kids. He's got three children. I don't know how many of them are in school, and I don't know where they go to school. But it's obviously she was apologizing for getting the information wrong, not apologizing for attempting to use the children of the governor of Florida to score some political points. Now, again, I think, you know, we've got this story up. I will tell you that some local media outlets were on this on Twitter. They have not written a story about this. They actually deleted a tweet because they argued that it was something that was being retweeted out of context since she edited her comment when she found out she was misinformed. Now, I don't know how often that happens, but I think this definitely warrants a story from the local media of how a school board member saw no problem with bringing in the governor's children to try to make a political point. The fact that she was wrong, I think is sort of secondary at this point. So now we've got two issues. We've got an elected official looking to use the governor's kids as political pawns. And the second issue is, why isn't someone else here carrying this in local and statewide media? Can you imagine if Governor DeSantis or someone was trying to use someone else's kids to make a political point? Now, you're going to argue that, well, you know, campaign commercials, he was using his kids because he had pictures of his family in his campaign message. You know, I think it's a little different than when you're trying to make a political point about some health issue than a campaign. And so, some people on Twitter did come out and saying, look, this is off, you know, this should be off limits. But until we hear from Ms. Wood and until we get a story from the local media or the statewide media about this, you know, this is just another example of, you know, the media cherry picking what they want to cover. And so, again, it will be, I can completely understand the emotional outburst from Ms. Wood in regards to her COVID test and her COVID positivity and her frustration. And I can overlook that, but this, I think, is going to take a little bit of a more detailed explanation. So, anyway, we'll keep an eye on this story. Now, what I'll do is I'm going to move the letter from Richard Corcoran to Superintendent Hannah until the last segment. And when we get back, we're going to pivot to the local corruption trial. And we're also going to talk about this Debbie Lightsey opinion piece. And we're going to go through that, talk about why I think there should have been some, you know, disclosures on exactly, you know, in relation to why she might be writing this and some other issues for when she was a city commissioner. So stay tuned. I'll be right back right after this break.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
Girl, and you're gone too far, 'cause you know it don't matter anyway. You can rely.
If it's local and it matters. It's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. Above the Fold is brought to you in part by Epps Decorating Center. If you're a homeowner, you should always be looking for ways to increase the value of your home. It doesn't always have to be a major project. A fresh coat of paint can transform the interior and exterior of your home in a dramatic way, and I recommend you start with a visit to Epps Decorating Center, Tallahassee's premier Benjamin Moore paint retailer. Whether you need interior, exterior paint, high-end, or commercial-grade coatings, Epps Decorating Center is ready to serve you. Give them a call at 385-6649. That's 385-6649. We appreciate their sponsorship. Okay, now we're going to pivot to this opinion piece written by Debbie Lightsey and published in the Tallahassee Democrat. As you recall, this has been this back and forth between some people on what I would say a progressive side that are starting to talk about corruption and trying to, you know, Jeremy Matlow started by questioning the chamber conference in an opinion piece I thought was way too broad. And since then, there's been this back and forth. The chamber responded, and there was other editorials about corruption. And now we get this piece from Debbie Lightsey, and it's headlined, "Time for City to Start Fresh, Purge Connections to Past Corruption." And it sounds, you know, who can disagree with that headline? The issue here is a couple of things. First, I want to go over what Ms. Lightsey is saying here. She starts off, you know, talking about the same thing that Jeremy Matlow did, and that's this sale of an $8 million property downtown to a developer with no local connections who has promised to build two hotels. One, I think, is a five-star hotel. There's a 3-2 vote on that. It went through the city or the staff process. And again, the fact that Ms. Lightsey's using this example and Mr. Matlow used it, this is the preference to both of these opinion pieces. And then they suddenly turn this to corruption. Well, there's one thing I want to clear up here. What happened with that $8 million sale of two lots downtown? Nobody is saying that it's unethical or it's corrupt. And, you know, look, I've seen corruption. I've seen unethical behavior. I don't see it here. Now, something may happen, but in the future to say it is, but it's not. And for these two elected, former elected leader and elected leaders to be preferencing their articles about corruption with that vote, I think is an indication of one of the problems we're going to run into here. And that is that they're using corruption to argue against things they just don't like. And look, if you don't like things, then you've got to change things at the ballot box. You've got to get new elected officials if things continue to go against you. Look, they have a problem with Blueprint. Blueprint has 12 elected officials on it. There were a lot of 9-3 votes. There are a lot of opportunities for people to call their elected leaders and have them vote against things. But to call the Blueprint process non-democratic, I think again, it's this hyperbole that is being used by people that don't like the decisions that are coming out of City Commission. Now they have really turned this over, or I shouldn't say just the City Commission, Blueprint. They don't like the fact that FSU is getting money to upgrade their stadium. That's fine if you don't like that, but don't confuse it with corruption and unethical behavior. There was a rationale for doing that. And I'm sure there are conservatives that did not like that, but it's not corruption. And so what we've got now is Debbie Lightsey, who wrote this opinion piece, talked about some decisions that were made by the City Commission that were not, from what I can see, unethical in any way. Maybe they didn't agree with it. And then she dips right into corruption. She mentioned Scott Maddox's name 10 or 11 times. And so, you know, her argument is we need to purge people from these leadership positions. Now, listen, I think there's a bit of truth in what she's saying, in the sense that I think we need to review people who are in these positions and look exactly at what their role is and how they're getting their job done. But again, to tie that all into this corruption angle is a bit hypocritical of Ms. Leipzig, because listen, some of the stuff that's happening is she actually condoned some of this behavior. She laid the groundwork for this. I mean, she served with Commissioner Scott Maddox. I don't remember her endorsing the people who ran against Scott Maddox. I don't remember her writing an opinion piece when he was running, saying that you know he could be a problem because of the past behavior that I've seen. So the question becomes now, why is all of a sudden Debbie Leipzig, you know, becoming really interested in what's going on? Now, before I move to, I've got to answer that question, but before I move to that, also, she was part of this divert compensation vote. You're talking about a lack of transparency. This is when they voted back in the 2000s to give each of the city commissioners a $20,000 raise. Tallahassee Reports reported on that with help from Dr. Irwin Jackson and got it reversed. She also endorsed a no-bid Honeywell project. She originally voted against it, and then when they asked her about the outcome, she was fine with that. Well, that was a no-bid project. And so all of a sudden now we see Debbie Leipzig, whose campaign was run by someone, you know, a company that is in the crosshairs of this investigation for, you know, looking at violations of the Sunshine Laws. So when she writes this opinion piece and none of that is disclosed, and you start to wonder, well, now, really, why is her opinion changed on this so much? Well, let me give you one of the things that should have been disclosed in this opinion piece. She has spoke out on a number of occasions against one of Blueprint's projects, the FSU Gateway, which is going to have an impact on her neighborhood. Now, there have been meetings. There's plenty of opportunities, just as there were for the Northeast Gateway, for neighborhoods to come out and to raise concerns and to have some potential impacts mitigated. And I can understand her situation. I did the same thing with the Northeast Gateway. When it came out, we got engaged. We asked some questions. There were some changes made to the overall project. Now, listen, the gateway's still there, but there were some changes made to mitigate the impacts on Killarney Estates. Well, now what we see is there's an issue with the FSU Gateway, and that's fine for Ms. Leipzig to go to these meetings and ask for things to be changed. But to write an opinion piece like this without that being disclosed, okay, I think is really, it raises the question of the credibility of these opinion pages in these newspapers across the state of Florida, because it's really beginning to look like they will pretty much print anything just to have content. And, you know, when you start connecting people to corruption with these really thin connections, we saw that in Mr. Matlow's opinion piece. You start to ask yourself, really, they're so concerned with corruption now, but really, is this what their message is? I think we're all clear in understanding that Dr. Irwin Jackson is concerned with corruption. But I think what we got to really keep an eye on here is people like former Commissioner Leipzig that are using this corruption issue as a federal trial takes place in downtown Tallahassee to reach their end goal of getting the commission changed or getting new people elected, because they're not happy with how the economy and growth policies are being handled by the Blueprint Committee and the City Commission. Now, the thing is it's a lot tougher to argue against a growing economy. Look, you should vote for this person because, you know, we don't want Amazon here. We don't want, you know, 1,000 jobs. You should vote for this person because this person would not let Amazon move into this area. That's not a winning argument in a campaign, but corruption can be. And the thing is that, you know, if corruption is the issue, sure. But if you're just using corruption to get people elected, they're going to put the brakes on the opportunities that we're seeing in our community now, be it the Amazon project, be it this $8 million the sale of the $8 million land downtown, which is going to bring jobs. If it's going to put the brakes on, you know, the housing market, which is really just really hot and creating a lot of jobs. So if you're using corruption to deal with that, that's not, it should be disclosed. And I don't think we're getting the full disclosure on this. And I think this opinion piece was a good example of that. All right, when we get back, we'll tie up some loose ends. We'll talk about the Corcoran letter and also give you an update of the corruption trial downtown. Stay tuned.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
Hi, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. Above the Fold is brought to you in part by Spartan Stoneworks, one of the most common and cost-effective upgrades anyone can make to their home is the kitchen. You're almost guaranteed to increase the value of your home with an updated kitchen, but quality materials like granite, quartz, and marble countertops can get expensive. Well, not when you go with Spartan Stoneworks. Pricing will be lower at Spartan because they do not mark up the cost of stone materials. The way they see it, since they didn't carve it out of the mountain themselves, they're not going to charge any made-up fees as if they did. Great pricing, amazing craftsmanship, and quick turnaround from an honest local company. Give them a call at 765-2037. That's 765-2037. And I appreciate you tuning in to Above the Fold here in our new time. 12 to 1, and stay tuned because Jeff Cameron Show will be coming up here live for the second day in a row. So excited about that. All right, so we're going to pivot to this letter from Education Commissioner Richard Corcoran to Superintendent Hanna. Now, look, we've talked about this previously. Superintendent Hanna was pretty much a voluntary mask guy up till Monday, and he gave an impassioned speech of why he changed his mind. A couple of things here. First of all, there's an order by the governor of Florida saying that he can't do that. Basically, and from what I understand, he has authority to do that. So by changing this to a mask mandate, opens himself up to a lot of different issues. Now you say, well, there's other districts doing this. Most of the other districts, and there may be one or two that are taking the road that Superintendent Hanna has, but most of the other districts, like Duval, they're issuing a mask policy which allows for an opt-out that has to be signed by a parent. I think I saw some stats in Duval County. So far, there's been 5,000 parents that have opted out. Now, there's some reporters that want to make that a big deal and say that, look, you know, see, only 5,000. Well, that's 5,000 parents that get to exercise the right they feel is theirs. So, you know, government in part is in place to protect the rights of the minority. Not everything is obviously a majority rule when it comes to looking at constitutions. So anyway, having said that, when Superintendent Hanna sort of pivoted to the mask mandate, which he's called a temporary mandate until September 6th, and he's going to sort of look at the numbers, I mean, in a way, he's actually violating the law. And, you know, the way a democracy works, I mean, you have to have, you know, you've got laws that are on the books, and you know, if you don't follow those, then there has to be consequences. You know, if you get caught speeding and get a ticket. This issue obviously is bigger than that. And so Richard Corcoran sent a strongly worded letter, which you can go to talisreports.com and see the article here. Corcoran calls Hanna's decision significant neglect, threatens financial penalties. And, you know, he lays out the argument here that, look, there's a rule and in place that in the statutes say the State Board of Education shall oversee the performance of district school boards and the Florida College System Institution Board of Trustees and enforcement of all laws and rules. So they put a rule in that you can't have a mask mandate without a student opt-out clause. Now, you know, I guess you could argue that they do have an opt-out, but they've got to get a doctor to sign it. I think the argument here is that the rule says that it has to deal with it deals with parents, and so, you know, it's clearly here that the law is on the side of Governor DeSantis and Commissioner Corcoran. Now, listen, public opinion may be different, and that may be driving what Superintendent Hanna is doing, But now Corcoran has sent this letter, and he has started an investigation, and he has requested, I'm demanding that you provide a written response by Wednesday, August 11th, documenting on how your district is complying with the rule that was passed. Any failure to adequately document and substantiate full compliance with this rule result in sanctions permitted under the law. Now, look, the sanctions are, you know, they can cut funding, which you really don't want to do because obviously that's going to hurt the whole idea of trying to educate children. But they can't also cut the salaries of the superintendent and the school board members. Now, Corcoran says in the letter that there is no room for error or leniency when it comes to ensuring compliance with policies that allow parents and guardians to make health and educational choices for their children. So therefore, it is imperative that you work together as superintendent and the school board to remedy this glaring noncompliance and report the resolution by August 11th. Now, you know, I don't know. We'll have to see what happens moving forward, but it's clear to me if what Corcoran is saying about the law that Superintendent Hanna is violating the law. You know, he had an out by simply saying, look, I really think we should have a mask mandate, but I can't do it because the governor, which is the leader of the state, has got a rule in place that says I can't do that. The fact that he has gone against that is probably going to score him a lot of political points from people that agree with him. And it's probably going to make Governor DeSantis look a little bit awkward in trying to enforce this because there's not really a good enforcement mechanism. This will be an interesting fight to monitor over the next couple of days. You know, one of the things that we talked about with Superintendent Hanna is he said he's going to look at the numbers up through before Labor Day to decide if the mask mandate will stay in place for K through 8. But during his presentation of when he announced he was going to go with a mask mandate, he never really talked about any numbers or what his measurements would be. And it's something that sort of characterized this whole pandemic. It's a sort of a moving goalpost on where the evaluation is. We didn't see any metrics that he was going to use, to deal with this mask mandate. And so I think that's also going to be a little bit of an issue. All right. Pivoting to the, we've talked about the Amazon project. It looks like it's coming in for a landing. I think that's all good news. We're seeing very good upticks in the economy. We'll spend some more time on that on Thursday, but I really wanted to get a quick update on the JT Barnett trial. They finished, he's on the stand defending himself, and now is being cross-examined by the Fed attorneys. And, you know, this is clearly boiling down to sort of a he said, she said issue in terms of what the jury is going to believe. He's saying that he was strong-armed by then-City Commissioner Scott Maddox to pay $100,000 over an issue that had already been decided. The feds now are asking him if he just made this up because it sounds good and will have an impact on the jury. The end of this thing can't come fast enough for me. You've got 12 jurors holed up in a room where you can't, you know, reporters are allowed to go into it, but they're not allowed to take their phones so they can record things. And it's a very difficult thing to cover. And I think we're getting some people doing a good job of tweeting out some information during the breaks. But I think we're probably missing the broad context of everything that's going on in the courtroom. And so, again, you know, it's going to be, I'll be glad when it's over. You get a verdict either way, and we move forward and see if there's going to be more indictments. If not, as I've said before, what happens when these trials are over is that what gets thrown back to us are the people that maybe enabled this, facilitated it, maybe committed some unethical behavior. Then our community has to deal with it, and you know, a lot of people will just brush it aside and hope it goes away. Maybe that's the best way to deal with it. Other people, are going to have to decide on what the best way forward is. Do you start holding people that are in jobs now that maybe took some actions? You know, do you penalize them? Do you, you know, ask them to apologize? It's really a tough road to go, but we can't get there till this trial is over. Mayor John Daley mentioned that at a recent appearance in public that the city was not really going to do anything until this trial is over. So anyway, that's sort of where we are. I would think that maybe this trial would be concluding by the end of this week or early next week. So we'll keep you up to date on that. All right, thanks for tuning in to Above the Fold. Like I said, stay tuned. The Jeff Cameron Show will follow. Have a great afternoon.